We're the steering committee. I'm Ryan Barkey and Mr. Douglas Fogler. I must have said your name wrong. I'm looking at Doug, though, through FaceTime. It's like one of those astronaut videos where you're going to show me how, like, the food will float into your mouth. But you're actually just a couple miles away.
I can show you how the beer would be.
It's kind of different tonight. It's a little, so we're doing this over FaceTime because I don't want Doug to give me the coronavirus, and neither does he want me. Not that we have it.
We're trying to be convid free right now.
No, but it's
all the convids.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't joke because I actually know people with it now, and they're all going to be fine, thankfully. But I guess it's we should. Yeah, it's probably not a thing to.
It's not a thing to laugh about. My wife's father works as a nursing home doctor, and we're getting updates every night from him.
So he really is on the front line.
He is. Yeah. He's been, fortunately his homes have been relatively, nothing terrible has happened yet. He has some cases, but, I'll tell you what's true first, if we can just digress for a second though, he has like six people he thinks have it.
Yeah.
Can't get test results.
So. Yeah. Oh, but all the senators and Congress people have already been tested whether they show signs or not, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if more of his nursing, staff and more of his nursing patients like played in the NBA, we probably have.
Just the essential, just the first responders and the lifesavers and the,
And the NBA player. If you're a power forward, then
that's important,
there,
so. And we have to laugh, though, because this is all sort of ridiculous, I mean, I think the last time we talked, we had already seen sort of a reduction in, the traffic going by. And now, I mean, at least here in Denver, it's funny. We talked earlier on the phone. Everyone's out walking. So, and then you see the same people an hour later walking.
We had some friends who actually moved into a house across the street from us, like on our street. We know them.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen them yet because they moved in literally right before we
shut down
our house. So we've seen them like walking across the street and we wave them, to them from like the other sidewalk, but we haven't had a chance to really go over and say hi.
I feel like we're all in bumper cars and we've got like this sort of ring of rubber around us. And then we find ourselves approaching each other and then boom, there's like this force field that's sort of, we've got to.
Yeah. Like do people walk down the sidewalk and like cross? Over?
Oh yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's and then you feel like you have to acknowledge it somehow, like, well, at least the sun's out.
How are you guys doing? Are you holding up?
Yeah, so far so good. But again, ask me in 2 weeks. By the time the next podcast rolls around, we may be.
And on that note, what I'll say is that, we all need a break from sort of the reality of what's going on. So Ryan and I are going to start recording and keep putting content up there so people can listen to it. And I don't know.
Yeah.
If for a brief period this kind of gets your mind off of the reality of stuff,
if the fans, if the listeners don't mind, not that we have the world's best audio on a regular day, but I'm sure it's not any better doing this over FaceTime, but it's what it is. And hey, if they're doing it on the late night shows, then it's probably okay that
they were okay that our bulky little
we do it too. Yeah.
It's done this way. But it's like I have noticed though with all the other, car-based podcasts, everyone's telling people to get out and drive. I mean, that's ultimate social distancing. So
yeah, unfortunately, we had a big snow a few days ago. That's just finally melting. Colorado. So we need a couple
Colorado,
more
not so much,
sunny but, days
but,
here. But
the rest of America, though, we have listeners, as you know, all over the world. We're huge in Thailand.
We got bumped off that chart. You should we were on there for a good week. Number 90 was it 96 or 97? Because.
You said 96.
Okay, all right. So and that extra position counts. I'm hoping we can break into Thailand again this week. Maybe
crack that top 100.
Yeah, I don't know, Madagascar. If you're in Thailand and there are people in Thailand that listen to this, thank you for listening. And this is a shout out to you. We appreciate it. You're putting us on the charts.
we appreciate it tremendously, and we will fight to get to earn your respect as the 96th most popular car-based podcast in your country.
No, we love you in Thailand, so keep listening. Thank you. And if I had planned, I would have had a phrase in their language that I could have a greeting or something, but I didn't, so maybe next time. But that's it as far as shout outs, because we haven't had a lot of personal interaction this week. Lyft rides.
It's been very slow.
So,
But I've had a lot of time to look online at cars that are for sale.
Probably a good time to buy a car.
Yeah, if you had cash lying around right now, I think you could do really well. I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, or if you, I guess you could line up financing, which I think a lot of people still have access to right now. So there are some great, really low interest rate on mortgages. So I would assume that would carry over for a car
loan. I would think. And some of us are getting a stimulus check, or at least were. Maybe we are, maybe we're not. $2,000, maybe. $1,200. There could be like a $1,200 challenge, whatever the latest number for that stimulus check is. I'll believe it when I see it.
I think we originally thought like $500, and then you kind of realize that there's really nothing good. There's nothing available.
Yeah, there really is nothing at the $500 level. I mean, that's unless you're like buying something from your grandmother. I mean, someone's either died in that vehicle.
If we talk about an arm's transaction, then yeah, I don't think we're getting a real car for $500.
Right.
But I think $1,000 though. I think some interesting options.
Is that when the good stuff starts?
Yeah,
that's when you get into the GT4s and
I think you get a side view mirror.
Hey, give this coronavirus a few more weeks, and prices might really come. Gas $1.88 up the street. So
I saw that. I know some new car dealerships were definitely offering like 0% loans on some cars.
We were looking to upgrade from our Tiguan. Is now a good time?
This might be the time to buy. Yeah,
but of course the trade off is we're going to get less on the trade, right? That's like so. It's sort of
that's true. Yeah, you're getting $27 for your car, but
right.
But GMC was the one I heard announcing like on the online like or on a radio ad that they were doing 0% interest rates basically.
Wow.
So I mean that's insane. So they're just bad. It just means they're giving away the car basically like just at whatever markup they're going to do, I guess. Like
yeah, I'm waiting for those negative rates.
Negative.
I think they're coming.
Oh man!
I do work with economists, and that is a thing.
Is it?
It is a thing. I don't know that I've ever seen that in my lifetime, but this might be the.
But it's a possibility, though.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, yeah.
So what does that mean? Like that they would have to.
I don't know. I don't know what that means, Doug. I just know that that's a thing. Hey,
I would take out the loan and have to pay back less.
I could probably get an economist on this show from work. That might be kind of cool. Explain this to me.
We're gonna run out of things to talk about. Let's talk about the negative interest rate and how it might affect buying a car.
I think that this is a thing. Again, I'm certainly no expert. Not only am I not a lawyer, I'm not an economist, but I'm pretty sure I was reading about something like this. So we'll see. Maybe it doesn't mean what I think it means, but not a lot of good car spotting lately.
Not a lot of good car spotting. I know from the text you sent me, you went out driving last weekend.
I did. It was, I guess last weekend, right? The day before it snowed. It was pretty nice.
I saw some good stuff. It looked
I'd love to say that the roads were all mine, but unfortunately a lot of the roads that are good roads, to drive are also the good roads, or also the roads that get you to a lot of the open spaces, the parks, the county parks, state parks, and things in the foothills getting up into the mountains. And so, I mean, those parks were just packed. I did see some interesting, stuff.
You said a 488 Pista?
Right? It had the stripe. It looked like a Pista to me. I mean, I'm not a Ferrari expert, and I saw it from a little ways away. I don't have the list in front of me anymore, but lots of cool stuff. But I had to laugh because we were just talking about the martini liveried Porsche 924, and then I saw one. I saw someone out driving, and I waved, and the guy looked at me like I was crazy or didn't see me or saw right through me or whatever, but did see a lot of cool cars, motorcycles, a lot of Porsches out, and I think all but a couple of the Porsches I did get the wave from, so that was kind of nice. And I saw another 718 Cayman. This is the second 718 Cayman I think I've ever seen while I've been in my car out and about. This time it was a silver S, silver with the black 20-inch wheels and the red calipers being an S. Pretty sharp car. Yeah. Waved at me, I waved at him, Colorado Boulevard, which is kind of cool. It was very sharp. It was prettier than my car, I'll admit.
But you think it's a different one than the one you've seen? You've seen one other.
I saw a silver base one time before. Yep. Okay. And this was an S. And I wanted a silver car. That's what I was looking for. And I couldn't find the right silver car at the time. And black was sort of my second choice. And I love black cars. But the Porsche I'd come from was a black car. And, you know, everything that goes along with a black car, yeah. Right? But this was really sharp. When the price is... When the negative interest rates come in, maybe I'll start shopping. Maybe
you'll get a second one. That'll be your second daily driver.
In my dreams, you know, I'm actually so appreciative for what I have, and the longer I have the car, the more I appreciate that car. It's almost like it's the more miles I put on it, the better it gets. And I don't know how much of that's just my comfort level, but that it's just such a good balanced car. You say whatever you want about the sound of the engine, but it's a good car.
It that brings up an interesting, point I've always thought about is that, you do get used to a car though, right? I mean, like a car
absolutely.
Can get better as you drive it, like as you sort of like just become like used to the limits and used to sort of like sort of how it reacts and the input it's giving back to you or the feedback it's giving to you, that kind of thing, which is like, it's always a great thing when you like get to that point with a car, you feel more comfortable.
It is. So. It surprises me constantly the cars that it can keep up with, the sport bikes it can keep up with. I mean, we're talking about a base Cayman, with the middle wheel option, and although we've had that discussion before, sometimes the smaller wheel is the better or the more stickier. What do you want to call it? Just the better car, the better handling car. But
It's like, because you get that mix of compliance.
Especially in the mountains with the turbo, when a lot of cars and are starting to gasp a little bit, it just keeps going. I don't know. It's been a really great car, and yes, I would love to have a GT4. Sure, I would love an S or whatever, but.
It's like you look at the history of Porsche and it's like, why? Performance aside, so obviously your car is the highest performing four cylinder that they've ever made, right? I mean, we can agree to that.
Unless you get the S, right?
But it's like as a family of engines, like the engines that are in the 718 Caymans, prior to this new announcement of the six cylinders that they're going to start putting in the higher end models. It's the, of all the, a quick survey of all the four-cylinder engines they've made. Obviously, the 356 had a four-cylinder, The 924 had a four-cylinder.
I mean, you can get a...
The 968.
Yeah.
They all had four cylinders in it. There's no doubt that this is the best one they've ever made.
Even a 944 turbo or whatever, is not going to be... nearly as fast as a base 718 now. It's
right. Yeah. But it's like, maybe because they didn't have comments and they didn't have YouTubers back in the 1980s, but I feel like no one was just like, complaining about the 944 four cylinder,
I'm kind of tired of hearing about it. God, get over it. In these all these reviews where they talk about the sound, I think every one I've ever watched, they end up choosing the 718 as the winner of whatever comparison, whether it's the Alpine 110, whether it's the new Supra, whether it's the whatever, what's the BMW version of the Supra that Z4, right? Z4. I mean, it's just, yeah. So, no, it's just, it's such a great car, and I enjoy driving it so much. And you know, I've talked about my previous car, the 997, which was, again, a more special car, you know, with the carbon brakes, and it was a, yeah, it was a neat car. I thought it was a prettier car, but especially when you're up in the mountains, I mean, this, the Cayman, I mean, it would have left that car in the dust. It's just the driving dynamics, just the neutrality of, you know, the handling, the way it just comes around a corner. I mean, it's just the way you can drive it with the pedals, you know, the balance and the weight transfer. And it's just, it's such a, such a good car. And I think as evidenced by the fact that I'm ready for my third set of tires, at least third set of tires in the back at just over 17,000 miles. So, and I will, and for anyone who's listening and says, oh, there must be something wrong with your alignment or whatever, they're wearing perfectly evenly all around. So that's not the issue. I hate when you get on a forum and someone posts, you know, is it normal to get the, you know, this kind of tire wear or whatever? And you know, you get some guy that's, oh, well, your tires are wildly inflated. I can tell by the, you know, the way that they're wearing. And there is some truth to that, of course. But no, just for the record, that car is aligned perfectly, apparently, because there's absolutely no uneven wear.
But the audience should know that you've completely stanced out the car, though. You've got the completely lowered and cambered, and you've got it completely.
You know, well, as you know, quite the opposite. It stands a little too proudly. Probably could stand to be lowered an inch or two. It does not have the PASM suspension or the, you know, like if you get the T model where it's dropped 10 millimeters. So there's a little more room in that wheel well than I would love. But you know what? Sometimes you come around a corner in the canyons and there's a rock sitting in the middle of the street or whatever. It's nice to have a little bit of clearance, but
every now and then there's an imperfection in the roads here in Denver. I mean,
that's right.
So in my world where I'm looking at a lot of BRZs and FRSs, I'm seeing a lot of them. They're just ruined because they're like, you know, they're just bored and they're just on like, you know, they're on like, you know, they're cambered out.
Yeah, yeah.
Have like no profile tires.
No. So I've seen a couple on the street where they've done it right and it does look pretty cool. But I promise you that's not adding anything to the driving experience or the driving dynamics or the performance when you do that, people. But anyway, we're at 20 minutes. So why don't we wrap this up and come back?
Right, let's take a pause here and we'll come back. All right, well, we're back, and we're going to do a conversation. I put this question out to our audience on social media, and I put this question out to Ryan, but we're going to talk about just what I would call normal cars that we're somewhat, for some reason, enamored with, or we really like these cars. There's no reason to. They're not hard to get. They're all over the place, but we just, for whatever reason, when you see one, you like it, you smile, or you just want one, or you're just enamored.
Yeah. So it could be like, you know, I don't know, the first time you saw one, you were having a good day, and it just stuck with you, or, you know, maybe someone you know, when you were younger, drove it, and you thought they were cool, and so that now the car seems cool. But, and then other cars that are just sort of, you know, maybe just unsung heroes, right? And unrecognized. You know, an example is I was walking down the street today because everyone was out walking. And I saw a Subaru Outback sedan from a distance. And it must have been like the performance model. It had dual exhausts. And it looked like now when we're not recording, I remember all the BMW codes. Is it the E36? So like 2002 M3? That's the E36,
yeah, the one that came after the E30, like the 80s one.
The one after that. So what is that?
E46.
Yeah, E46. Yes, you're correct. I thought that this Subaru with the dual exhaust, and I guess you don't see a lot of sedans, and hey, you know what? That's pretty sharp. Car.
I think that's interesting, yeah, because the Outback sedans, they did offer it for a while.
Yeah.
It was relatively limited, and they didn't keep it up. But
Doug, I'm lying. It was a Legacy GT. Sorry, it wasn't the Outback sedan. That was a very rare car. This was just the Legacy GT, but it had kind of the same taillight shape. It had
I had to wonder when you were comparing it to the BMW. I was like, okay, I'll go along with this. But now that makes much more sense.
right. But that's not one of my cars.
Okay.
I'll
kick it off. The car that got me thinking about this, and this is totally weird because it's not anything like what I usually like, but I've always liked always liked, and still to this day, still like, the first generation Ford Transit Connect vans. Okay?
I like them too.
I think they're interesting.
They're
small.
Yeah, it's the small one. We're not talking about the big one. This is the small one, right?
This is the small one. Yeah. This is the one that, you know, they've had them over in Europe for years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, half of the European economy, you know, basically runs on these things. You know, if you're anything from like a florist to a plumber to a electrician to a, you know, a dog groomer, you like, you know, you run your business out of one of these things. And then they brought them over to the United States, you know. You know, at that time period when Ford was trying to basically like consolidate how many, you know, cars they were making, you know, sort of use some of the cars they were making in Europe and sell them over here and vice versa. But, you know, to this day, I still like them.
Well,
no, they just look like they're happy. They're
very European.
They're very European. I mean, they really are. They're front wheel drive.
Yeah.
I think almost all of them are front wheel. No, all of them are front wheel drive. You know, they have a tiny four cylinder engine. They're economical.
Right.
I don't know how they would do going up the mountains, but I just want to, there's two I would want. For some reason, I want to buy one of the little mini UPS ones that I've seen running around.
Yeah,
yeah. Because I had, like, when I was young, I had, like, fond memories of, like, UPS trucks driving around.
Well, the UPS man always delivered happiness.
Always delivers, yeah. And then, or I would get one that has seats in the back, and I would kind of turn it into, like, either a camper or an activity vehicle.
Right.
I don't know. I've always liked them.
I like them, too. And I remember when they were new, I pitched one to my wife, Molly, as a family vehicle. I thought they were that cool. And I remember they were pretty pricey at the time for what they were. And I'm looking at the horsepower numbers. And I was sort of enamored with the Europeanness of it. And at the time, they were, you know, now we see this style of van everywhere, right? Like the, you know, the Dodge, was it the Ram? There's the...
Yeah, Dodge has one.
The Sprinters, and there was this European van look that I think the only American van, or the only van that still has that sort of old school, whatever the Chevy is, I think they call it the Astro or whatever. That van still sort of lives, right, in whatever version it is now. But there's no more Econoline. There's no more, you know, traditional Dodge van. So with the exception of the Chevy or the GMC, they've all gone European. But at the time, that was a real, really unique thing. It was
really unusual, because you're right, because like all there was, if you didn't do this type of van, I mean, it's not quite a minivan because it's not the same as like the minivan.
Right.
Like you said, if you had a small business, this was great.
Right.
You know, they were highly reliable, they were simple, and you know, you still see them running around out there. So anyways, I keep seeing them pop up on Craigslist, and they're as cheap as like $5,000.
Really? Okay. Because I seem to think they were $30,000 or more when they...
I think they were when they were brand new. And the current ones, so there's a current version of this as well, which I like as well. They're easy to get that up over, you know, $32,000 pretty easily.
Car nerd alert, Mr. Doug Fogler, because I couldn't tell you the difference between the first generation and the current one, honestly. I don't know that I could distinguish between them.
Well, you may not. I bet you're thinking of the ones with like the big square headlights on it.
Okay.
And like sort of a. Well, I have a picture of it up on the Facebook page.
Okay.
Confirmed. So you can take a look at it there.
Is that the tell?
It's just a. You'll see. It was a redesign in like 2016 or 17. So the ones that are driving around out there now are a little different. But you know, I think it was from 2000. You know, I want to say like 2011 or something to like 2016 or so. They kind of look like these square ones. So, and I know I'm not alone on these, because I didn't know you'd like them. I didn't know that you had been close to purchasing one, but I've talked to other people.
I pitched one. I don't know how close we were. I think that's when we were shopping
the point is, like, you know, you kind of like these things.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate them.
And I know other people who, you know, don't give a toss about cars, and they like these things too. So, you know, it struck a nerve with at least some sort of percentage of the population.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that one. That I was surprised, or I thought you were going to hit me with something a little more out there. I mean, this is good. I didn't guess.
This is what I want. I don't want them to be too out there.
No.
To be like ones you see all the time. And for some reason, you like them. So
yeah, no, and you
so
can.
I was going to say, so what's your first one? Let's just go.
All right. Well, now you said come up with three. Of course, I came up with like 12 in 5 minutes. And I know that we're going to end the recording, and then I'm going to say, damn it, I wish the one I really felt strongly about. Yeah. So Okay. Now this is this is a car you don't see that often anymore. But I thought these things were beautiful when they came out. Every once in a while I'll see one pop up and bring a trailer, and the design, both exterior and interior, I think is just beautiful in its simplicity. And it's also a car that really illustrates what we think makes a luxury car then versus now. So the first generation Acura Legend, actually I would say the first and second generation Acura Legend, and especially the coupe, they weren't that common then. And you know, every once in a while I'll see one now, but usually it's pretty clapped out. But I was thinking about it, and it's not just those, it's pretty much the whole Honda Acura lineup of that time was pretty wonderful. It was sort of like we talk about the Mercedes Benzes of the 70s. That was really sort of at their peak of quality. And I've actually got that down lower in my list, so I wasn't going to talk about that one. But the whole lineup was good, you know, and not everything had to be sporty, right? Like now we think luxury equates to sportiness and tech. But at the time, a car could just, you know, have the features of the day, but be well built, right? That was sort of the signifier of luxury. Anyway, I thought the Legends, and actually I would say the second generation was even prettier than the first generation, but that whole spectrum from the Civic to the Accord to the, you know, to the CRX, what a cool car the CRX was. So
the Integra, it was amazing that, you know, they sort of took a chance on building a sport compact, but selling it under their luxury brand. You know?
Right, right.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, you know, that's funny. I never thought of that, but the analogy of Acura in the late 80s to early 90s was the same as any, was as good as any other golden era of any other manufacturer.
Right, and right.
Was, they were just, everything was a hit.
I mean,
I remember my dad's friend had a, I'm not quite as up to date on them maybe as you, but like, I think it was a Vigor. Was that one of their models?
Yeah, that was the five cylinder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he took me, I went on a long, we went up to, it was one of the days where my dad was working. He and I went up to go watch IndyCar racing up in New Hampshire. Mm. So I got a nice long highway trip.
On yeah, there. Nice.
That car was awesome.
Yeah.
I came away from that appreciating those Acuras so much more.
You know, and I think Toyota had a good lineup. I think even Nissan had a really excellent lineup. I almost went with the Nissans of the era, that 1989, 1990 Maxima. And you know, the other thing about these cars, I mean, they were so simple, right? You either got the, I think it was the GXE Maxima or the SE Maxima. Did you want luxury or did you want sport? You know, I think if you went in to buy a Honda Accord, I remember my parents going in to buy one of the new Honda Accords when they came out in 1990. They went to the, you know, they went away from the pop-up headlights to the enclosed headlights. I don't know. What do you call it? Sealed beam? I don't know. And I think there were three trim levels. It was DX, LX. No, wait, is that DX, LX, and what was the top of the line?
LX, LX was usually medium the line. I think like EX or DX.
EX was the top of the line, right? So it was DX, LX, EX was the top of the line, right? And you know, I remember seeing this really sweet teal green one with the polished. I think when you got the top end one, it had 15 inch wheels instead of 14 inch wheels, right? But I love, like, if you wanted cheap, you could go cheap. You could get the DX with a manual transmission, the cloth seats, and the 14 inch wheels with the hubcaps and no sunroof and the four speaker stereo. You know, I mean, it was I don't know. It's just, to me, that was a golden era for them. And sounds like you agree.
I agree. I mean, it was just a. Yeah, they were the Japanese companies were really going from strength to strength at that point. So I think Acura was a special. It was just a special moment there for a while.
Yeah. They had like a, well, the NSX. Right? Sorry to interrupt, but the NSX.
Yeah, the NSX. I mean, they had that, but I mean, the NSX was amazing. But it was more impressive that like even their midsize stuff and their compact stuff were also just like incredible. And you had all this. At the same time as, you know, that's sort of at the height of McLaren and Ayrton Senna and, like, you know, Formula One's dominance, basically. They were
Honda was
just, you know, Honda was on fire though.
Yeah. So yeah, they really were. Well, I could talk about that era of Honda all day, and it's so funny. I'm not generally a Japanese car guy, and you know, but man, that was just. I mean, you can stack that era of Honda up against anything, truly. Yeah. So, all right, back to you.
So interesting enough, I'm going to go with a Honda, but from a different era altogether. I actually am strangely and weirdly obsessed with, and I think it's just a great vehicle. I've recommended this to a number of people looking for something in this segment, but I love the first generation Honda Ridgelines. I mean, I don't know what to say about them, but I think they're amazing. I think like it's the closest I've ever come to thinking that a car can be like many different things.
Uh-huh.
Them all very
yeah.
well. I generally think when a car tries to do too many things,
yeah,
then it's kind of a compromise all the way around. But I think this is the closest thing to an actual Swiss Army knife
yeah.
in cars. So,
the hit against it when it came out was that it wasn't trucky enough, it wasn't butch enough, and then they came out with the second generation.
Yeah. Which looks more like a pickup truck, but I think is actually, I mean, they're neither one of them. They're both unibody. They're not like body on frame pickup trucks for whatever it's worth. But you know what? Like, I remember specifically, I know when I really came around on these things, I'd been driving my father-in-law's Ram 1500 here in Denver for like a week or two. And, it's like, you know, you don't think of it as being a large vehicle, but you drive down some of these roads here in Denver and you're like, you feel like you're scraping your side view mirror on the other, you know, parked cars on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
And then I went and test drove one of these. It was a used one. It was in decent shape. I was considering buying it. And it was like a pleasure to drive. It felt like a car.
Yeah.
But it was still wide on the inside. When I was testing it out for when we were looking at a car that could fit three baby seats across the middle, they easily fit with like room to spare, even though it's not that big on the outside. And, you know, frankly, I mean, especially for me living in a city, I don't need an overly built pickup truck, you know?
Yeah.
I love the fact that it has a pickup bed I can throw things into, but I don't need like,
right.
You know, you see ads for pickup trucks. There always has to be that obligatory shot of like a front end loader dumping stones into the back.
Not the Honda Ridgeline, my friend. I think you got a shrub or two from Home Depot in the back in that commercial.
It could do more than that, but I
think kid, I'm teasing.
But I think I know, but it's like it's all I need though. I don't need 80%.
Yeah.
I need 80 or 70% of what those trucks can do.
Right.
I'm not doing I don't run a construction company. I'm not going to mountain expeditions or anything.
Right. Well, yeah. So, and neither are most of those actual truck owners, but
yeah.
I've never liked the design of those.
Okay.
At least the first one sort of had the body cladding. I sort of appreciate the newer one because it doesn't have that, but it looks a little wimpy, even for me, and I don't care about that kind of stuff, and I am not a truck guy. But I also will say if I were to buy a truck, it would probably be the first thing I would test drive. Doug, I will probably go through my whole life never owning a truck. I'm just not a truck guy.
Not a truck guy.
I'm okay. not a truck. That's I mean, fine. Maybe a classic pickup truck or something, but I just... Yeah. I am not a, you know, a late model, you know, $60,000 fancy pickup truck guy. You know what appeals to me? Those the WT, like the work truck, right? But I always get a kick out of it because they're called the WT, you know, and you rarely see one, but they're the one, like the no frills truck. That appeals to me so much more. Sort of the electric car argument, right? Like, give me a Nissan Leaf. I don't necessarily want a $100,000 Tesla. You know, give me the $20,000.
So the point is, if you buy a truck, you want it to be an honest.
I think so.
You want it to be like your, you know, like a tool you have in your garage.
I think so. But at the end of the day, the Honda Ridgeline, I mean, I'm so much more comfortable going to a Honda dealership, you know, than a Chevy dealership. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like, that even though I don't love the way either generation has, looks, I know that it's a good vehicle. You know, we owned a Honda, never had single issue with it.
On Consumer Reports, the Ridgeline and the Pilot, you know, they're the same, you know, for this generation, they're the same. they're one of the highest rated, most, you know, likely cars to go, you know, 300,000 plus miles.
Yeah, that's,
you know, with minimum work on it. I mean, well, just like their workhorse.
Yeah, so, I think. And I would probably get a Pilot, or, you know, I would probably get a Pilot before a Ridgeline. Just, again, I think suits our lifestyle like better. I said, but
the whole segment here is,
yeah, no, this is good.
Cars,
this is,
and strangely, we're,
yeah, yeah, like, yeah. We don't have to agree on all these.
This is one for me. And
but
it, and I understand that I might be alone on this one. I'm
no,
sorry, yeah, with other people, and sometimes I am alone on it, but. But,
I thought you were, yeah, no, I again, I don't think my issue is even with that vehicle. I think I'm not a truck person. Yeah. But, you know, if I were to get a truck, the first one I check out, I get it. So I'm going to come back to you with one that beats that one. So that's a good one, because I think the people that have them love them, you know, it's, so I don't know how new you wanted these choices to be. How far back were you thinking?
I didn't, as long as they could just be commonly accessible. But
okay.
Okay.
All right. So,
what do you got?
A car I've always appreciated. Now, again, we're going back into the 90s. I think they made this car in a later version, well into the 2000s, but you really didn't see any by that point. I'm talking about, okay, early 90s. Yeah, I think about 90, 91. I mean, again, a heyday for cars for a number of reasons, but I've always had a thing for the Mitsubishi Diamante. Right? Now, I know it was sort of a shark nose ripoff of like the BMWs of the era before. But I've always thought that was a good looking vehicle. You know, there was a Gallant that was pretty cool. It was the VR4 Gallant. I mean, they were making the 3000 GT. Again, you could say that was Mitsubishi's heyday. But I've always liked the looks of the Diamante. I remember, I don't know, years later, riding in the later generation, and it was a different focus, right? It was an economy car at that point, just a big economy car. But when that Diamante came out, it was, I think, on par with an Infiniti or a Lexus or an Acura in many ways. I think it was a little cheaper than those, but it was a really attractive car. There's just something about, it was pretty cool. So, never driven one. They could be awful in every way, and I rarely see them around anymore, but it's just a car that always catches my eye when I see one.
No, that's a good, that's an excellent example. That's exactly the, you're on the right wavelength. That's exactly,
I'm probably the only one though. See, right? So it's,
yeah. No, I knew a guy in college who was obsessed with his Diamante. He had one.
Yeah.
It was his first car.
Okay.
He fixed it up, and he knew everything. He could tell you everything about them and the whole product line.
Yeah.
And everything. And it's the same thing. I think you would find that those things have a little bit of a cult following.
Yeah.
I don't think you're alone.
And
I think they were really handsome looking cars, you know?
Like, I think I've only known one person that drove one of those over the years. And when I was in high school, there was a girl whose dad was, I think, the U.S. importer for Lynn Hi-Fi out of Scotland and some other really high-end audiophile brands. And I just remember thinking he was a pretty cool guy, and he had a Diamante. I just thought that was super cool. So anyway.
No, that's a good choice.
Yeah. Back to you. See, we could do this all night, but.
Yeah, we probably could.
What do you have next?
My next one's probably going to throw you a little bit, and I just saw one drive by the house in real life again, and so I'm just confirmed because I saw it, and I was obsessed with it for some reason.
They do exist.
Not the Diamante. I just meant my next pick.
Right. Which is what? That's.
So it's the second generation Toyota Yaris hatchbacks.
I don't even know if I can picture one of those. I know the Yaris. My father-in-law had one of the early Yari, and Yari. I was never terribly impressed by it, but it wasn't the hatchback. So I'm trying to picture what this thing looked like.
This is a second generation, so it's like it's like 2005 to like 2012, I think.
Okay.
And I don't really, the sedans are one thing. I don't really care about
them. Yeah.
The hatchbacks are just these like little round, almost like little.
Okay, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And the wheels are pushed all the way out to the corner.
Right.
Basically. I mean, never driven one. I don't know how they handle it. They assume not very well because it's not their focus. But they just, to me, look like a very cheap and cheerful little car.
Right.
Probably just probably just works constantly. It works perfectly all the time.
Yeah.
Never lets anybody down.
Yeah, a lot of hard plastic.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, that's every car built after 2000. But I don't know. I feel like I want to buy one. I want to spec it out for rally racing. I just want to go bouncing around with it or something. I don't know.
Looks a bit like the Mazda 3, right? Like there's a 2-door Mazda 3 that they're also selling, or they also sold as a Scion for 1 year. Is it the Toyota IQ or something?
It's different than the IQ, I think. It's actually
The IQ is another one, though. That's that really stubby one that looks like a smart car. We should have had that on the list.
Well, that could be on the list.
Yeah.
That's another, I like little stubby cars.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought it was interesting because the Yaris was different than those cars. So they had that in the lineup at the same time as they had these other things. So it's like they had to be treading on each other's territory a lot. So
I seem to remember that my father-in-law's Toyota Yaris had a center-mounted like console, like the speedometer and everything was in the middle. So, or was that the Echo? One of those, everything was in the middle. So it was simply a matter of shifting the steering wheel over from one side to the other for like, you know, world market. Yeah.
JDM market.
And I never could. Yeah. That never really quite reconcile that in my mind.
You know, that makes me think, this is just a side note here, but you think about all the manufacturers that are based out of England and Japan.
Yeah.
And a majority of the cars they build are built for, you know, with a steering wheel on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what they would normally do. I think that's just interesting.
Yeah. So, well, we should do a whole episode about that. Like, you know, why the countries that make cars make cars. Like, you know, where that all, I think we've touched on it before, but.
Yeah. Because it came up.
At one and how that's point, changing. Like, yeah.
Yeah, well, so at this point, it's only countries that are island nations that can get away with it at this point. So it's Japan, Australia, and England are the only three that are holdout right now. So
well, Korea, there's it's Korea. Just, are you talking about from the original, like the original manufacturers?
Yeah. Do cars in Korea?
Oh, sorry, I'm talking about where cars are built. You're talking about where cars have the right-hand drive.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
Now, we did talk about when Sweden switched over one night at midnight and chaos ensued.
Yeah, well, you had that funny picture that we put.
That's right.
Of what it looked like when you did that.
So this isn't my next one, but I wanted to sneak this. I'm going to group this one with yours. That Saturn hatchback that I think originated as a Vauxhall. And I sent you a picture of one because it was debadged and it took me a second for it to register. What is that called?
Was it an Astra diesel?
The Astra. Wasn't it the Saturn Astra, or is it the Vauxhall Astra? The Saturn. I don't even know what they called it here, and they hardly sold any of them. And it's kind of a cool. It looks like a Euro car.
I think they brought them over right before like the
financial
meltdown, before they had to like, and then they just shut down Saturn. But it was like, ironically, it was like the best looking.
I know.
Saturn that they ever built. I mean, because it was built on, you know, it was like based on this, like, you know, European car, you know?
Yeah.
You're right. I do remember that. That was a good one. That's kind of a unicorn if you can find it.
It is. I seem to recall there was either a turbo or a six, or there was even a rare sub model. I could be way wrong. But do you remember how
Redline?
Yeah, probably was, you know, the Redline. Yeah. The whole evolution of
performance
brands. Right. Well, the whole evolution of Saturn, I mean, you were old enough to remember when Saturn first came out and they had those cheery TV commercials where everyone, I don't know, it was Chattanooga or whatever, they built those things and they're having the Saturn homecoming and, you know, I mean, it's just, anyway.
It was like a cult or something.
Yeah, really, you know, really. And then that didn't last for very long.
To pick them up and then went back for their annual barbecue for Saturn.
Not a whole lot of follow through there, but. Anyway,
it was interesting. Well, I'll tell you why I think it was interesting, because I think the cars were just as bad as anything else GM was making.
Yeah,
because they were going
even worse.
They're going for this whole like, you know, customer experience thing. Their people were loyal to their
Saturns. Yeah, but it goes to prove how important that is. I mean, those were crap cars for the most part, and people thought they were the best thing ever. I'd only ever driven one Saturn, and it was sort of contemporary to, you know, when the brand was. Still, I mean, probably toward the tail end. And I remember it was a second generation SC1 was a coupe. And it was actually a fun enough car to drive. It was a stick. It was a guy I knew let me drive it. But it was just, I mean, the car had, you know, 40,000 miles on it, and the and the fabric on the driver's seat was showing the foam. I mean, it had already worn through. It was just that kind of sort of inexcusable stuff. Like, you know, the difference would have, it would have been pennies to have just stepped up to the nicer fabric.
I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to be, you know, to feel like you're being overly critical.
Yeah.
Like, well, Honda figured out how to make the Civic on a budget, and you know.
Oh, and Civic was no more expensive, I don't think, at the time. Maybe even cheaper, but yeah. And they had to bring them over from Japan.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever the I don't know what the direct price point was. I'm guessing the Civic was like a little bit more expensive than the equivalent.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, it was a business model that worked. People bought the one that was better
because, well, that's, you know, it was a higher quality. Yeah, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right? So I've got a few more, and I know we're coming up against
Saturn's driving
around. No, well, that's it was a very special episode. Saturn, next time on the steering committee.
Okay,
so let's wrap this up. And
we're coming up on 20.
Yeah, and I want to come back and I want to talk more. I'm not ready to let this go because I got some good ones in the hopper here. So, all right, we'll be back. All right, we're the steering committee. We're back in spirited conversation. What are we calling this again? It's the
it's like normal cars that we love.
Or,
you know, common cars that we love. So this is a little bit different than the average cars that we spend time thinking about.
They're
cars that are easy to find.
Yeah,
you see them a lot, but they just for whatever reason, you know, you really like them. So.
Yeah. I'm trying
to. When we left, you said you had a couple more you wanted to talk
about. Yeah. So, I don't want to go. All right. Well, I'm going to mention this one just because I saw one parked on my street today, and I've seen it parked before, and I've always admired it. And it's an interesting car to me for a couple different reasons. And this one's actually, we're bringing this a lot more contemporary here. The 2010, 2012-ish. You think I don't know the BMW model codes. I definitely don't know the Volvo codes, and I've even owned a Volvo, but this is the sort of early, what would you call that? Early 2010s-ish, wait for it, the Volvo S80 V8. So this was a rare car.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a special car, and I probably should have done a little more research, but this, by... you know, 2012 or so, this was a pretty lame duck car. No one, you know, how many people buy the 7 Series anymore? How many people buy the S Class? And we all know that the first ones to have the value tank, right? Well, the poor S80 at that point, it had been around for a long time. And this may have even been 2016 at this point. I think they were still making this car. But the S80, you know, I liked it because it was just a bigger version of the S60, which was a bigger version of the S40, which is sort of a bigger version of the S30, right? It was sort of the old BMW principle of just sort of different sizes of the same car. There's really nothing visually to distinguish this car from any of the other Volvos. It's an old enough platform where it wasn't massive, right? So even though this was the flagship sedan, it didn't have like the presence or the stance of a, say, like an S-Class or something. But what a just sort of a paradigm of design, I think, quality, driving dynamics. From what I've read, I've never actually driven one of these, but I've been in the non-V8 one and thought it was pretty cool. So you know the car, right? And the V8 was a super rare.
You know, I didn't until I had to look it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I recognize the S80 now, and then I'm guessing the V8 option on it was like a limited edition.
Yes, and it may have even been the last couple of years, and it has a badge on it that says, like, on the C pillar or whatever, that says something, you know, I don't know if it's some sort of anniversary or basically whatever Volvo's equivalent of the Wolfsburg edition is or whatever. We're about ready to kick this model to the curb, but or who else? I mean, I guess Porsche is more known for their launch or their early models, but you know, who else does this? It's like the Tiguan that I have, the 17. We thought that was the last year they were going to sell them. I think they're still making them, but they're calling them the Classic, right? This was kind of the same way, like, and it was wildly
Range Rover did that.
Yeah, it was wildly overpriced, but maybe in a way it was sort of the last of the true Volvos. It was a tank, and the V8 option, it was, I think, 317 horsepower, so it had good power.
Was this the same V8 that they put in like the XC90 for a little bit?
Well, that's a good question. I imagine that it is. imagine that it is, but I just know that I can't remember the last time I saw one, and now we've got one up the street. Yeah. I kind of want to.
I remember the sedan. I remember the base sedan. I remember the styling on it. For some reason, the taillights in particular are just these very, you know, they kind of have this, like, there's this, like, character line that kind of comes down from the trunk down to the side panel. It's just really interesting. Well, but, I remember these. Yeah.
It hits that spot of there aren't really a lot of cars like this right now that are sort of designed. Designed to be under the radar, right? Like, we talked about watches a couple, you know, episodes ago, and this is sort of, I know they're completely two different brands, and in this case, the watch case, the brands are related, but Tudor and Rolex, right? Like, I always appreciated what Tudor was, because it was sort of traditionally a Rolex case, bracelet, and all that, but with an outside movement, right, to keep the price down, and it just wasn't as flashy, it wasn't, you know, and I like, that's like luxury that, I mean, even, you know, you compare that to an S-Class or a 7 Series where it was just, hey, look at me. And this is a car that mechanically was probably just as good, drove just as well, you know, maybe not the BMW, but it just, it's understated, right? Didn't need to flash your cash kind of luxury car. And I'm trying to think, I mean, now I look at what they're doing to Lincolns or whatever, and you know, Lincoln's, they probably needed it, right? But everything has all the chrome again and the tacked on crap and the BMWs with the 2 foot tall grills. And it's just, this was just so charming. And if you lived in Vermont and you had money, I feel like this is what you drove, right? Like, I mean, this is.
Well, if you're a tenured professor at UVM.
Right. Well, I got an old Volvo, you know, I mean, and I want to say that they were over $60,000, but I remember them. That last year they were for sale. They were, again, and this was only a couple, 3 years ago, I think, because I remember going on to, is it True Delta or one of those sort of, you know, what's the best deal you can get on a car? Like, what are the real prices that cars are selling for? And I remember they were selling for something like $14,000 below sticker at the time, but it was, you know, it was just still too expensive for us for a daily driver. Probably not a bad move that we didn't buy one, because I can't imagine what they're worth now. Maybe like a Phaeton. Maybe they're just like amazing cars being sold cheaply.
It's funny. It's like, they're like, it's like they're really cheap to buy and they are amazing. But like, they're like, if you think about the depreciation as like a cost, that becomes, but that's only a problem when you buy it new though. If you buy it used, you know, you're avoiding all that.
It's true. And my only experience with the Volvo personally, I had it was either a 2001 S40, got it when it was about 2 years old. When I was a younger man, I think I've talked about this car before. I had it 11 months before I traded it in on an Audi A4. The Volvo was a great car in so many ways, great gas mileage and all that, but it was constantly in the shop. And it was dumb stuff. It was clips breaking, you know, that held panels in place. It was just silly stuff. It was wheels made out of such a soft metal that every time you hit a tiny pothole, they would go out of round and you'd have to have them straightened. It was just a very high maintenance car, and kind of turned me off of Volvo. But I mean, again, this was, okay, we're talking, that's a 20-year-old car now, Doug. But I kind of feel like this is almost that generation, or maybe the generation after the car I had, that they built this damn thing for 12 years or whatever it was. So anyway, that's it.
Well, that's interesting. Well, this is a slight tangent, but I've always actually wanted to ask you what your opinion on this is. Are you familiar with Volvo's current lineup right now?
Yeah, I am a little. Yeah, I think I am. I think I'm pretty familiar with.
I'd like to ask what your opinion is, as someone who's in, is a professional in sort of the visual medium.
Yeah.
You have an art school, you know, education. But I happen to think like the current Volvo lineup might be one of the best looking. Like
it is. Overall. It is.
I think like I don't think there's a. I think every single one of their cars is like very, very, very well designed.
They, it they is. Have this, yeah,
like,
they are.
Unique design of like kind of being like futuristic.
Yeah.
But like, you know, but still very like simple, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's, I don't know. So you agree with that?
Yeah, I think their largest SUV is really attractive. That would be the XC90. I really like still the S80, right? The sedan, and then the V80, the wagon, or is that the 90 now? Or whatever they're calling it.
I'm looking at their website right now. So V is for all their wagons.
Okay.
S is for their like sedans. There's a 90 and a 60.
Yeah. So it's the 90.
The 90 in particular is a very unique looking.
It is. I think of the wagon is beautiful, but I see even fewer of the sedans, and the sedan is really striking. I don't love the taillights, but it's sort of teasing those Polestar design cues, the Polestar being right around the corner. And that's a beautiful car, that really expensive. I don't know if it's for sale at this point or whatever, but that to me is sort of the future of car design. I don't have it in front of me, but I think the Polestar was sort of like the performance, and then now it's sort of going to be the hybrids, right?
Yeah, I think that's the idea, is that it's going to be kind of the sort of in-house, sort of like high-end performance and hybrid sort of brands.
Well, you asked me visually, what I think. I think they're absolutely going in the right direction, and they might be the only company right now where they have a shared visual language right across the lineup, which... Yeah. A cohesive sort of messages, design, messages is important too. And a lot of companies don't seem to get that. But no, I think they're absolutely going in the right direction, and they're killing it design wise right now. I'm not always into all the safety features and all the, we've talked about this before. I want a simple car. Give me all the quality and all the looks, but at least allow me to turn off all the nannies and stuff. To me, they're a distraction, but strictly design wise, I think they're killing it.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I was, it's almost something where it's like, I want to buy one of these and just sort of put it in my garage just to look at it.
Yeah.
20 years or 30 years. Cause I think it'll look like stunning at that point.
Now, is that the wagon or the sedan?
Either
What's
one.
Your I preference? Like
both,
yeah.
But the sedan, because sedans are becoming like an endangered species, I'd almost want to buy a sedan preserve it and just like keep it, cause so it's like, this is what we thought. Like, a four-door sedan, the zenith of that, what that design could be, now they don't exist.
Isn't that funny? It's almost like the wagons are starting to be appreciated, and the sedans now are on the, chopping block. But
if you think about it, I think sedans are in more trouble in some ways.
Well, okay, so prediction. I think that sedans are going to come back strong here in a couple of years, because people always want what they don't have, or always want what the other people don't have. And I honestly think people are getting burned out on SUVs. I think people are going to go back to sedans because they're not SUVs. Give it a few years.
I keep thinking it's going to happen, but I don't know. Because sometimes a lot of that backlash is more about like, well, I just don't want to drive what my mom drove around.
Yeah.
Right? Or my dad drove.
Well, and that's a good, right? No, it killed the minivan, kind of, almost.
The minivans and the SUVs almost killed off the station wagon.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because these parents that were driving kids around didn't want to be like in a station wagon.
So right.
They had to get into something else. But I don't know why, like at this point, we haven't had a generation of kids who are like, I don't want to be in an SUV. I don't want to be in a crossover SUV. I want to be in something different. So maybe it'll happen.
I just want rear facing third row seats for my child before she's too old.
There's a 1970s Ford LT.
The green one. It's gorgeous. Wagon.
But not only does it has sideways facing.
Yes, like a Land Rover. Yeah.
Like in two rows of it.
So I know. Yeah. Like a 110. That's awesome.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
So all right. Well. So
Wait, whose turn is it?
It might be my turn.
I think it is.
Maybe I'll do in my time here is I'll talk about some of the cars that our listeners have sent in that they like.
All right. Well, I'm gonna throw my last one. Sorry,
do you
I
have
just
one more? Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'll be done, and then I want to hear about the listener cars. Probably the last car you'd ever see me in, Doug. I'll give you a guess. It's a sports car.
Yes.
It's American.
Oh, okay.
And it's.
Wow.
It's a car of our youth, our teen years.
So we're talking about like an SLP Firebird, basically.
I've always kind of admired those, but no, I've always had it close, very close. Always had a thing for the Fox Body Mustang, the LX 5.0. So not the GT, not the louvers, and the.
I know exactly what you mean.
I really have always liked, with the cloth. They had that rough cloth interior. I always thought those were just cool in their simplicity. I thought the police, they had that seat, Chip's car or whatever that was based on. I think they used them in Florida and a few other places too, that Highway Patrol version. Yeah.
Georgia. No, I know
that. Yeah, that was Georgia. Cool. It was a little notch back. I remember we lived in a, I think it maybe told this story before, but we lived in a condo building when I was in high school, senior in high school, and we had a shared, you know, it was like a mid-rise with a garage parking in the basement, and there were always neat cars in this place for whatever reason. But one of the coolest cars was, there was a, I think it was a Swedish or Danish guy that was in the States working for a couple of years, and he wanted to buy a Mustang. And so he went out and bought, it was this, it was a kind of a light red. It was almost a, you know, Ferrari's got a few different reds, and this is sort of like the lighter red versus the Rosso Italia Rosso or whatever. Rosso Corsa, that's on most, the darker red. So this was almost an orange red. It was an LX 5.0. But it had the white leather interior with the white roof, and it was a manual, and I just thought it was so cool. It left an impression on me, and I always liked that generation.
Because, and those are like the understated of the Fox Mulder.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
As opposed to, like, you know, the GTs, yeah. But they had, like, you know, they had the engine, they had the running gear, yeah. Everything else was the same, but they were like a little more understated. I like those. It's a good choice.
And so. I think they were actually like a little quicker in the quarter mile because they still have all that crap hanging off this, you know, yeah, the front of the side. But anyway, sorry, I just want to get that one. And that's it for me. What did our listeners have to say?
Well, it just, by looking into this, it reminded me too. I'll talk about this only real quick because there's not much to say about it. But I love the early, you know, the 2000, you know, Subaru and Impreza Outbacks, those little hatchbacks
yeah.
that they made. Yeah. I don't know. I just thought they were fun. They were all-wheel drives. You know, they kind of like, it seemed like they were giving you more than they had to
for right.
that sort of segment.
So right.
They were all-wheel drive. They were reliable. They were dependable. They would have been great ski vehicles if I'd lived
sure. there. Sure. Good size, yeah. compact.
Yeah, they're compact. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. They're just, you know, and you still see them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, no, the for them is to take one of those and turn it into like a 22B. I'm getting into some real
things. Sure. No, I know what you're talking about. I can
that's
picture it.
That's the 22B.
It was never sold here.
That's yeah. a station wagon.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the 22B was never sold here, and they never made the 22B as a wagon, but
okay.
I'd want to, like, you know, I'd want to make it into like a tribute to that. But but I posed this question to our listeners, and I got some interesting responses, so...
And I should say you are the I don't call you the webmaster because that sounds very 1990s, but you are our social media guy. So
social,
you are the voice of
social media coordinator, is what that, I like that, to say. That, you know, the head of the steering committee youth outreach program.
So if you ever disagree with anything, it's all Doug.
It's all me. When I answer you and it says the steering committee, it's me talking. So,
I'm teasing but.
No, it's okay. It's fine. All I'll say to that is that, you know, well, the steering committee Facebook page is an authoritative regime, although it is benevolent. So, you know, so at least we'll
flag you if we don't agree with your choice of.
Maybe not.
You can.
Unless the power goes to my head and we become arbitrary and capricious and arbitrary. So, we'll see. So Alex out of Massachusetts wanted to write in. He liked my choice of the Impreza Outback.
Yeah.
And said that his favorite was just an old fashioned '97 Impreza wagon.
So okay.
He had just the base model Impreza.
Sure.
The 2.2, and he says he still loves those cars. He bought one from someone and he fixed it all up, and he still to this day loves seeing them around and has a special place in his heart for them. So,
well, Alex, I would agree with you. I also, well, I had a 96, a two-door, two-door sedan. It wasn't quite a coupe. It was a hand-me-down for my wife's family. We had it. It was a city car for us in Chicago for a while. Had a couple of strange repairs. I think I've talked about this before, but the only car I've ever owned where I had to replace the fuel filler pipe, the tube, due to corrosion. It's also the only car I've ever taken to a car ex for maintenance. But this was a Minnesota and Maine car, and so it didn't help the corrosion issue, but... one of the most fun times I've ever had in a car was taking that car out to the country on a gravel road and whipping that around the corners with the gravel flying up. And I wouldn't have done, again, would not have done that in any other car I've ever owned. But in that car, I didn't care. And got to the point where, even though it was pretty beat up, had some rust, it was, you know, it, didn't have a ton of miles, so maybe 110 or 120,000 miles. I got to the point where I didn't like street parking anymore because I had sort of built up this affection for the thing, you know? And even though, like, I'd go out and I'd, you know, find a new dent and I'd be pissed, right? Because I started to appreciate it. It was slow as could be, you know? I mean, it would drift on the highway. I think it had 13 or 14 inch wheels. It must have had at least 14 inch wheels. Had these, you know, terribly skinny tires, but it reminded me in a lot. It was all wheel drive, right? Like it had that, you could fling it around. And
well, that's a question.
It was essentially good.
To answer this, but so your 96 was all wheel drive, right?
I think it was a 96. It could have been a 94 or something, but yeah, it was a manual transmission, base model, two door, all wheel drive, red.
So. I love it. I love all wheel drive.
Cassette deck.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Chris from New York City wrote in, and he said he's always had a fond place in his heart for 1997. You know, that generation of Honda Civic, and actually, this is related to our earlier conversation.
Yeah,
he specifically lists as the EX. He said his brother had it. It was his first car, and it's still running pretty well to this day, according to him.
Wait, so
that exact comment.
Yeah.
So he just loves 90s, you know, late 90s Honda Civics, because it's like he knows that it'll just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, those were great.
And I know for a fact, he you know, Chris is from New York City.
Yeah.
So that's driving around. That's some hard city miles.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a perfect city car. And, you know, if I remember correctly, that generation, the hatchback had that clamshell sort of hatchback where the bottom part would pull out, and the top part. It was just a really cool car, and I think that was only that one generation. I could be off on that, Chris, but I just remember thinking that was really cool, and it must have been terribly complicated and expensive to build because I don't think it came back on the next generation. But again, yeah, those were great cars. So far we've got two things in common: two Japanese cars, two compact cars, right? I mean, sort of, but both had the essential sort of goodness baked in, right?
Yeah,
that's cool. Well,
now that I think about it, a lot of these cars people have been sending in, I would just say majority of them have all been Japanese. So you picked a Ford, I picked a Ford, and then you picked a Volvo. So those are the only three that I think came off of that came off that list. So. I got another one here from, this is from David in New York City as well. Shout out to
him. I like that we have listeners in New York, and, you know, yeah. I mean, it's, I think I've never lived in New York, but when I lived in Chicago, I think I never appreciated a car more. Not that I could drive it every day, but I think because I couldn't drive it every day, that it really was represented a way to get out of the city and go have fun. And maybe that's what it's for these guys too, but
maybe, yeah, I think, I mean, I know David is a pretty big car guy. I've actually,
okay.
this is a friend of mine. I've been to the New York City Auto Show with him.
Nice.
So shout out to David. I knew him as Tiny in college. I don't know if he still goes by that, but, we'll call him by his given name. So he threw up, he likes the Nissan NV, which is kind of like, sort of like what you were talking about earlier, is like, you know, Ford Transit Connect kind of came over,
yeah.
And then suddenly, like, other companies started bringing over their sort of smaller market vans.
Right. Although isn't that the full size one, or am I thinking of the?
Well, you know, actually,
As
I'm looking at the picture of it, I'm realizing it might be a full size.
Okay. Yeah, it's sort of the Econoline, right? And
yeah, it's pretty big. Now that I look at it, and he specifically picked out a one that had been converted to a 4x4, but.
Oh, so that would be cool.
That would be a great, all activity vehicle here.
Yeah.
So, here in Colorado or anywhere, if you want to go up to the mountains, you know. But he sent that in. He likes
cool.
He likes the Nissan NV passenger vans. So.
Well, he said passenger van, and I don't know that I've ever even seen the passenger van version. I suppose in New York you probably see, you know, shuttle vans and stuff.
You see a lot of exotic stuff in New York.
I mean, yeah,
it's not necessarily widely available. You'll see, like, if a manufacturer only made like 20 of them, it's like you'll see.
You'll see it there. Yeah. Well, one of the Jalopnik guys, right, has that sort of scene on the streets of Brooklyn, or that's not the name of it, but yeah there's some pretty cool stuff that has popped up.
Interesting stuff, considering it's a northern city that, it's tough on cars up there. You still see some, I've been to New York City a lot of times, and you see some amazing things there sometimes on the street.
Well, everything from the money, right?
Everything from exotic, but even stuff like this, it's like if you can find it and you can get like a 7-passenger version of this, it's like someone will have it there.
Right.
So, Sarah from Redondo Beach, shout out to Sarah. She picked the FJ Cruiser, which, I think that's an interesting choice.
And yeah.
It was an interesting little 4x4 that they built for a while that was pretty much the same as like their Forerunner, but, you know, it has its own built-in cult following.
Yeah, all two doors, though.
It's all two doors, with maybe a mini hatch on one side. You're right.
I think on the driver's, is it the driver's side? I don't know, it's always the van argument, right? Like, which side do you put the door on? And then someone had the great idea of, well, why not both, right? But isn't the FJ Cruiser, wasn't that a car that, I've always liked those, and you see them everywhere here in Colorado. They're hugely popular, they have a super high resale value. But I feel like there was a time, maybe 5 years ago, when they weren't so expensive. They were pretty cheap, and now they're almost expensive used as they were when they were new. What's interesting, usually when that happens with cars, it takes longer than 10 years, right? And I don't know when those came out, when they stopped making those, but boy, that's a car that I bet they wish they never stopped making.
No, I guess I never understood it's like a coupe version of the 4Runner. So
I don't know, they look cool. They still look contemporary.
Maybe it came at the height of, so this is a, I don't know if you know this about these or not, but do you know Jonathan Ward from
iPod? Yeah, I just listened to his interview with Rogan, but
he was the main designer on this. It's not something that he has done a lot, but he designed these.
That's right. I think you mentioned that. That's cool, but I'd forgotten. Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
I mean,
that makes so much sense.
I mean, it's certainly like, you know, it's retro design. I mean, that he was going for like sort of a retro FJ40 look, but it's one of these retro designs that I don't hate because it has enough of its own personality that I like it.
I think you nailed it right there. It's when we hang our hat on, you know, this sort of retro thing or whatever, it's so easily sort of burns out, right? Because it's not timeless, right? It's literally tied into time, and you know, and this was different enough to I think break out of that, and I think maybe that happened a little bit. It was starting to look a little whatever, but then people realize, hey, you know what, this is sort of its own thing, and this is still really beautiful and unique and cool and again, now I've been in Colorado for 5 years. I remember they were cool and Chicago when we were still there, but we see so many of them here that they almost never went away. I don't know if it's like that, you know, other places in the country, but they're just, they're cool though.
I think we could. I know for a fact there's like five of these within less than half a mile of
the house,
because I see them all the time.
Well, Doug lives on the other side of the tracks from me, so
it's rougher over
up there. I meant it the other way. I think I'm over here on Baltic Avenue now. Trying to think of my monopoly. I'm kidding.
We're at least Connecticut Avenue over here.
That's right. Park Place is one over, right, Doug? So, you know, thinking, I didn't run this past you, but maybe we should talk about the most overrated cars next week, because these aren't really underrated cars. These are sort of, we're gonna put this in.
I don't know if they're. I think some of the cars are just about rated where they're
unsung heroes, right?
More closely with like unsung, a good car that was just mass produced.
Yeah,
that was really really well done.
So
people like them for whatever reason.
So maybe we talk about the blowhards like on the next one, huh?
We could talk about the overrated.
I feel like we could do another whole
episode, and the FJ Cruiser would be the
Well, we'll have to talk. Maybe we need to go out and drive one. It shouldn't be that tough here.
Well, and to be clear, like not that it's overrated. I just mean this is the FJ Cruiser is a poster child of the cars that are still popular in Colorado that aren't popular
enough. Oh, well, that's another
country anymore. That's what I was thinking. Is like it's like the car that like you know all of the FJ Cruisers are here.
All the Volkswagen Vanagons are here in Colorado too, and they're all sitting in the passing lane going up 70 into the mountains. But
that's true. Yeah, well, there's another one. So, but
so grinds my gears. It's. Okay. Well, should we wrap this up?
I think we're at a good point
there. Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you to all our listeners that sent in some choices, and you know, you got your shout out.
Yeah, I appreciate everyone writing in.
Look for some more questions. I'll be posting them up there pretty regularly.
Yeah, and for our Thailand listeners, you know,
if they want to say anything, if they want to tell us what's popular in Thailand,
please do. I'd love to hear from you as well. Yeah.
So, cool. Anyways.
Oh, thank you, Doug. Good to talk with you. Until next episode. You still look like you're in space, by the way. Like.
Well, I finished my beer, so I can have that for
back to the controls.
Yeah.
All right. Good night, everyone.